Mike, listen to these 5-star reviews. I can't believe I got my order so fast. Easiest exchange ever. A loyal customer for life. In the last 2 months, our reviews are better than ever.
That's because we leveled up our fulfillment process by switching to ShipStation. They're way more comprehensive than other solutions, and we save up to 90% off all major carriers.
Ugh, best upgrade ever.
Upgrade to ShipStation today to get a 60-day free trial at ShipStation.com, code AUDIO.
Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. From Hackney with Love is a fascinating book by Richard Yeboah, and I pray that I've got his surname right, dealing with a really important issue. It's one I think we should address, which is basically the gentrification of London and how it is basically mucking up the heart and soul of our great cities. I'm delighted to say that Richard joins us live on the line, presumably from Hackney and not from some cheesy development warehouse overlooking the Thames. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Morning. Yes, very well. Very well. Thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, another day in Spain. It could be worse. Now, the thing is, you describe yourself as a local historian, a commentator. For those who don't know sort of this area in London, and I remember it very well because I was the editor of a proper military magazine in the 90s. So I saw an awful lot of what was happening. So explain the background to Hackney and the makeup of it, because it's not one of the richest areas of London. So it's also had a fascinating sort of makeup, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, you're completely right, Charles. And I'll probably give a quick 2-minute kind of overview of the history of Hackney.
Hackney so, 101, if you like.
Hackney 101. Yes. So Hackney, and you'll probably find this out more in the book, was very much started off as kind of a middle-class suburb, a place where the emerging capitalist elites, as the British Empire expanded, went and lived. They built villages, they built townhouses, they treated it like one historian described as a bourgeois paradise. And over the next, I would say, 100 to 200 years, Hackney increasingly became poor, and that was predominantly due to the expansion of the empire and the rise of industrialization in the East End. So places like Bethnal Green and Whitechapel, where they had already had quite dense slums, those individuals then went to Hackney in search of living space as industry expanded in the East End. And over time, Hackney became increasingly poor. And you may remember, Giles, but many people remember by the 70s, 80s and 90s, Hackney became probably one of the poorest places in the country.
Yeah.
You had high levels of crime, high rates of poverty, unemployment, and I'll probably talk a little bit more in terms of Thatcherism.
And geographically, it's sort of, because perhaps some of our listeners won't actually know London like we do. It's kind of northeast, is that the right way of sort of describing
it? That's the right way of explaining it. So it's part of the East End, but it's kind of got northern elements as well. Now, I actually live in the northern part, so yeah.
I mean, also, there was, it's interesting you mentioned empire, because if you like, one of the big turnarounds is what happens during, obviously, the war. You've got the bombing because you're northeast, so the Luftwaffe is going to come down the Thames and go, oh, well, we'll hit that then. A lot of it gets, obviously, destroyed. And then, of course, we have, and it's interesting you mentioned empire, because 1945, that is the end of the empire, pretty much. So we see India, we see Windrush coming in, we see the call of the British, who want, you know, people from the former colonies, quote unquote, and I'm being really careful what I say here, Richard.
No.
Former colonies, come and help us rebuild. And obviously, this is, you know, Hackney is one of the areas that becomes culturally diverse before, if you like, it's a kind of thing.
I completely agree, Giles, and I think it's probably an area that I kind of skipped over just now when talking about the kind of decline in the borough from an economic perspective, because the World War had a significant impact. The First World War initially, but more decisively the Second World War, like you mentioned, the bombing campaigns of the Nazis, and the kind of Commonwealth came to this country in the 1950s and 1960s and 1970s, and my parents later in the 1980s to rebuild Hackney, to work in London, work in other parts of the country, and really build new lives here. And one of the really, and I'll talk about this in a bit more detail, but Hackney is so unique for its diversity, particularly its cultural diversity. And that, I think, was brought upon by the Second World War and the subsequent immigration of many people.
And one of the interesting things I find about your book, I mean, like I said, I mean, I was in London in the early 90s, writing about international, about property. Places like Notting Hill and places, and I was living in Brockwell Park, Tulse Hill, Brixton, right? And places like that, Streatham, Clapham, Balham, were close to the, like, pretty close to the centre, pretty close to Westminster, you know, Chelsea, that sort of thing. So they kind of became, they were amongst the first places, Battersea, for example, to get gentrified. And at the time, with the greatest respect to Hackney, because I was working on City Road, you know, Hoxton was there be dragons, and Hackney was the sort of place that you didn't go to, because, well, not you didn't go to, but, you know, nice middle class white guys like me didn't go that way. Because, and so the areas around central London became gentrified first, and that's perhaps the marker to what happens.
Yes. Yeah. I agree, Giles. So, I mean, I'm a black working class man that's always lived in Hackney. And Hackney, I think you're right, it wasn't a place that people wanted to go to. It was a place that was described by many people as like the worst place in the country. It was kind of seen as a no-go zone, crime, poor housing, poor education. And that was the Hackney I remember when I was growing up. And I think you're right about saying that, you know, those places were kind of exempt from gentrification for a long time. When places like Islington, Notting Hill, Camden, to some extent, that were kind of on the outskirts of inner London, were getting gentrified far more earlier. But I think what happens, and I'll talk about this a lot in the book, is an injection of wealth into the centre of London, particularly as a result of the development of Canary Wharf and then Liverpool Street and then the Olympics subsequently, where, you know, inner London becomes far more attractive.
Yeah.
And that then pushes up development in Hackney, which I talk about a lot in the book.
Here's the thing though, okay, because we're, you know, I'm going from the outside, you know, from my warehouse conversion, you know, in Battersea or Butler's Wharf. You know, Hackney, it's the sort of place you go through on the way to Stansted Airport if you have to. But if you're Hackney born and bred. You know, and we talk about, you know, multiculturalism because, hey, it's front and centre due to what's going on in the UK at the moment. And, you know, I can pontificate all I want to, but going to school there, living there, knowing the community intimately, though we may say, oh, it's one of the poorest areas. For you, Richard, I mean, the experience must have been, you know, talk about mixing with other people and getting an education. It must have been, you know, it's not all, you know, gangs and a bit stabby, is it?
No, not at all, Giles. I think when I grew up in Hackney, it was like a common place for different kinds of people to interact, live among each other. And I think there was a common perception of all of us living amongst poverty to some extent. So you could have been white, you could have been black, you could have been mixed race, you could have been Asian, you could have been from anywhere in the world, and you still would have felt like what kind of assimilated all of us together was that sense of being from Hackney and the common understanding of how difficult it was to live there. I think what has happened over the last 20 years, particularly as a result of gentrification, where you have more middle-class, predominantly white people coming into areas like Hackney, there's a sense of change in culture, there's a sense of isolation a little bit, and there's a sense of displacement. And that's in real terms because people can't afford to live here, but also culturally because some of the places in Hackney, and I don't know if you've, Giles, if you've been to Hackney recently, but some of the places in Hackney that used to be familiar to us no longer feel familiar. So I think that's the biggest issue, which I cover a lot in the book.
Okay, Hackney Empire, is it still there? That's the first. Is the Hackney
still there?
Right,
still there.
I mean, because that's a touchstone, isn't it? Because that's the community and you know, live from the Hackney Empire, and that's seen some great bands, some great comedians, some great shows.
Correct.
I mean, once you, if that becomes
you know, a trendy, quote unquote, a trendy wine bar, then we're all doomed. But the thing is, I mean, a lot of people, and this goes back to sort of Thatcherism in the 80s, which is, you know, we were encouraged to buy our own homes. And if you got on the property ladder, like my friends did in Brockwell Park in the 80s, you know, they bought their houses for, you know, because Brockwell Park was nothing, but they bought the house for X amount, and they sold it sort of 10 years later for X times, you know, 250. So if you've bought a place in Hackney, if you have come back, you know, from the empire, if you like, worked hard, got yourself a house, and then suddenly somebody comes in and says, I will pay you X times 250. You're going to take it, Richard.
No, of course. I think I talk about this a lot in the book. My parents were kind of part of that lucky generation that was able to buy their homes, right?
Yeah.
And I think what is interesting about Thatcherism and the whole process is that I think we need to separate the recipients of those policies and the drivers of those policies. So Thatcherism was, in my mind, a systematic opportunity by the government at the time to kind of use neoliberalism to depress areas like Hackney and then subsequently regenerate areas like Hackney and then encourage privatisation, decentralisation of local government so that foreign wealth or wealth from all kinds of places can go into places like Hackney and make it more attractive for the few to benefit from. For those people who bought their homes through right to buy, I mean, who wouldn't buy their home through right to buy? And I think, again, they are a lucky generation, but that generation of people in the 80s and 90s, unfortunately, have made it more difficult for people like me in the 2020s and future generations to be able to sustain themselves in those areas that they've built livelihoods in. So it's a real difficult process, but it is. I'll talk about this a lot in the book about how neoliberal policy from Thatcherism to Blair to some extent to the austerity government from the 2010s to 2020s to now has been a systematic opportunity to transform places like Hackney for wealth.
And the other thing is, if you are the leader of Hackney Council and you're sitting there and you're seeing the LDDC doing Canary, London Docklands Development Corporation, doing Canary Wharf, and everybody's talking about Limehouse, and everybody's talking about Hoxton, and you're thinking, hang on a second, why aren't we getting any of this? We should be getting some of this. So they will be going and say, right, bring your international company, or look, we've got a street market too, or we've got a shishi wine bar, or I'm sorry to keep going on about wine bars, but you know what I'm saying? So perhaps they go for the bright, shiny thing without thinking of the impact it's going to have. Because once you open that door and people start saying, oh, look, Fiona, you know, we can get a place for half, you know, a bijou townhouse in Hackney. As you say, you know, the floodgates open and the whole thing changes.
So I think, Giles, it's an interesting one because I wasn't there in the 1980s. I wasn't a politician. But I wonder whether there was two positions. There was obviously those who kind of saw Hackney as a dump and were like, do you know what, let's... Look, the Docklands it hasn't been used for 30, 40 years. There's whole pieces of wasteland in places like the Docklands and et cetera, and subsequently in Stratford when the Olympics was announced, who genuinely thought, you know what, let's just regenerate Hackney. Let's turn it into a fashionable place for wealth and for investment, which is one angle. And then there's the other angle who, I mean, I presume there might have been people, but definitely in the Labour government and in the late 90s and early 2000s, who genuinely saw places like Hackney, like, we need to help those communities in those areas. They can't continue to live in poor housing. They can't continue to live with poor education. And I think there was a dynamic at play where I think over time, because of austerity and the return of the Conservative government and, you know, some of the policies around Help to Buy, which clearly indicated that this was more about wealth. I think the trade-off between the two, I think the neoliberalist policy and the privatisation of areas like Hackney felt intentional, less so about the kind of needs of those communities, including myself.
So when people start gentrifying the place, what would you, because, hey, I'm based in my bear, everything's new, basically, and old buildings being built in the 70s, but... So people come in and the next thing you know, everything's turning into a cheese shop or a vegan pizza. I mean, what are the outliers? And also because presumably because of the narrative a lot of these people have been fed before they move, that they don't actually want to get involved with local communities because they think, again, it's going to be something almost like threatening to them, Rich.
Agreed. And I think the process, I mean, having lived in Hackney for the last, all my life, but having seen it over the last 25 years, there feels like quite a distinct process. So there's the depression of existing housing in places like Hackney, which has happened in Peckham, which has happened in Tottenham, which has happened in Camden. There's a clear depression of existing areas where those areas become increasingly less attractive. Elephant and Castle is a good example now. And then there's, I guess, this period where property developers, local authorities, central government invest large sums of money into those areas. And in that process, what they effectively do is that they remove social affordable housing that was for existing communities with a portion of affordable housing, but also privatised housing. And in that process, where there's private housing allocated in those new regenerated spaces, you get a division of communities where people with wealth will then have the opportunity to buy those homes where existing communities can't. And some of those existing communities subsequently have to move because there's a reduction in housing in those new estates. So that's the kind of housing process. When those new communities come into Hackney, or other gentrified places, is that what they do is that they create their own cultural trends. Some of those trends might have existed in their other places that they may have lived, might have existed in their heritage, but they bring their own cultural norms to places where it would have been unfamiliar. And that's where the wine bars, the markets, the trendy coffee shops.
The farmer's markets, like, that sort of thing.
Farmer's markets.
I mean, it's like, exactly. I mean, if that's not...
I'd never known what that was until, like, 2008.
I was in Clapham, and there's a place called Abbeville Road, which became really popular with stockbrokers, all that sort of lot, property developers, and it suddenly it got paved over, and it became Abbeville Village. And it was that one strip of road, which had a dome, it had a Café Rouge, it got vintage shops in it and the whole situation. The rest of it was, the end of it was Brixton, the other end of it was basically Balham, but this was Abbeville Village, and this is the thing, isn't it? How does the community react to that sort of thing? And where do people go then if they can't afford to live in Hackney? I'm not saying that, but where are they being forced to go to? Substandard stock? So, I mean, what?
So, Giles, I'm going to answer the kind of three points. So one is the village point, which is an important point that I don't want to miss. A lot of property developers, what tends to happen is they change the term from estate to village. And that is a key selling point for gentrifiers, right? No one wants to move into estates. It's got connections with post-war housing and dilapidation, all that kind of stuff. Village is a much more attractive term because many gentrified people are familiar with villages, right? In outside London. The point that you mentioned around how existing communities feel, I think there's a sense of distrust. There's a sense of remorse for the Hackney of old. There's a sense of exclusion because they're not feeling as comfortable as they once were to be in Chatsworth Road or in Dalston, places where those communities that I mentioned before, post the end of the empire, had made home. And I was talking about this yesterday, that it doesn't feel like there's a real solution to it. That doesn't feel like there's an ability to merge those communities because they are very different. And maybe over time there may be, but these are, particularly at the stage where gentrification is quite rife, you have middle-class communities who, are transitional. They may only be here for 10 years. And then you've got communities that have been here for 50, 60 years who have tried to build civilizations here.
So. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, because... You're spot on, because these people are working in London, they're in the city or they're whatever in media. But once they get to a certain, like my age, they're their dreams to have a little place in the home counties or come and live in Spain or something like that. So they will move. They will sell on from a profit. And so, their children won't stay in Hackney. They will then move out, which then fills there's a gap there. They'll sell their houses and you're wiping out communities. Local pubs have gone. They've become gastro bars. Post offices have gone and you've just ripped the soul out of a community. And I'm not saying everything was wonderful, gore blimey, Governor,
no,
but
Yeah, but Giles, that excellent point, because the point you mentioned before about where do people go next, that is probably one of the most challenging questions that I need to even ask myself, because I will need to leave Hackney eventually to be able to afford a home, because I can't afford a home here. But then you have to think, where do I go next where I'm going to get the same community feel that I did in Hackney, a place that's affordable, and a place where I may be accepted, given that, you know, the country's in a very difficult place in terms of...
That was delicately put, Richard.
yeah, exactly. In terms of where certain communities can live. But the point you mentioned about, you know, the transitional element of gentrifiers is an important one, because it's something you see in schools, and I'll talk about this in one of the chapters. Many of Hackney schools are now closing because they have low numbers of children in the area. And Hackney was always known for, you know, children, right?
Yeah, yeah.
People, kids,
yeah.
Here, there, everywhere. I was one of them. But what has happened is birth rates have shrunk. And I think it's partly because existing communities now, or working class communities now, have to move elsewhere. But the emerging middle class communities have less children, but they're also going to move out the area when their children are of a certain age. So they're not going to keep them in Hackney schools. They're going to go elsewhere. So Hackney schools are now, primary schools in particular, are not able to have, or don't have enough children come to their schools. So they have to close.
Wow.
And this is a real problem.
And then they become turned into apartments for developers.
Exactly. So it's like a extension of gentrification. And this is why the book, typically gentrification is focused around housing,
region,
but crime, education, class, gender norms, all of that is connected into the book because it touches on various different subjects.
What was the spark that made you say, right, I've got to write about this? What was the thing that made you say, got to do this?
So I've always kind of, and I think many other people have, not just me, I've always kind of thought about, you know, well, Hackney's definitely changing. It's a problem. But I think there was two significant points. I think one was around 2012, 2013. I just finished university, but I also just had my first child. And I was young. And I remember thinking, wow, I was in Dorston. And Dorston was very much the place where, you know, it was a black multicultural area, but it was seen as a dump by most people. And now you've got a huge high-rise building. You've got a lot of trendy cafes and shops there, particularly in 2013 when the Olympics had just happened. And the community just had it just started to change.
Mm.
And it started to make me think about, you know, how can we document the history of Hackney's past? How can we document this process of gentrification? But I think what intensified it was the COVID-19 pandemic, when I kind of realized that a lot of the gentrified communities actually weren't there during the COVID-19 pandemic. I think a lot of them must have went back to their homes outside of Hackney or back to their parents or wherever it may be. And you started to realize that, you know, Hackney had changed quite significantly. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic gave me the opportunity to kind of reflect on that and then subsequently start writing the book. So, yeah,
it's been a long journey. Who did you speak to about this? I mean, did you talk to, you know, people in the community, people who came over in the 50s and 60s, your parents?
Joss, there are so many interviews in the book. So it's kind of like a personal memoir from my own experiences, but it's got experiences from my family, my parents, a lot of my friends, a lot of communities who have lived in Hackney for years, communities that have then subsequently left Hackney, politicians, academics, musicians, a whole host of different people are in the book, which gives it a very clear sense of community. The book is not just like this academic book that doesn't include the community. It isn't just my personal reflections. It's everyone's reflections connected through the discussion of gentrification.
What are you hoping that people are going to take from the book? What do you hope they're going to learn?
I think a couple of things. I hope that people learn about the history of Hackney. I think what has disappeared slightly is that I think since Hackney's been gentrified, people just care about, oh, I want to go to this market, or I want to go to this shop, or I want to go to this bar. The history of Hackney is very important. And I think the book really tells that story of Hackney's past. That also will give communities a voice. I think many communities have felt left behind, and a lot of the stories in the book are elevating those voices of communities in Hackney. And I think lastly, I think what it will do is open a debate of gentrification. I think gentrification sometimes is very straight and narrow. It's either, well, Hackney was poor, it needs to be transformed, or let's get all the white middle-class people out of Hackney, that kind of stuff. And I didn't want that kind of discussion. I wanted a more nuanced discussion that kind of reflects on all the different elements of gentrification to give a more balanced discussion of, you know, the problem and how it can potentially be solved.
The book is called From Hackney with Love, which is one of the most remarkable titles I've done this week. If people want to find you online, where's the best place? Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, where do people find you?
I'm on all of it. So Instagram, Rick Yeboah, Y-B-O-A-H. Same as Twitter. I've got a website called Rick Yeboah as well. Search me on Google. The book's out now. It's published through Bite Back, but you can buy it on Amazon and all other
bookstores. And you can also order it via our own virtual bookstore. Go online to our bookstore on TRE, and you can order it from there. The book is called From Hackney with Love. It's by Rich Yeboah. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.